is so intent to make sure we don't lose that thought. He stepped into this. He chose this. This was the Father's will for him to do, to save every single one of those whom the Father had given him to save. And Jesus had been saying this the whole time.
As we continue our look and exploration of this mock kangaroo court trial of Jesus, here in John chapter 18, we're reminded by John himself that even though it may look like Jesus is out of control and has no say in this, it is really quite the opposite. He is in complete control, has ultimate say in it all, and it is for a purpose and a reason. Welcome to Abounding Grace. Pastor Chris Gordon takes us back to John chapter 18. Join us there for today's broadcast.
Then they led Jesus from the house of Caiaphas to the governor's headquarters. It was early morning. They themselves did not enter the governor's headquarters so that they would not be defiled but could eat the Passover. So Pilate went outside to them and said, "What accusation do you bring against this man?" They answered him, "If this man were not doing evil, we would not have delivered him over to you." That's exactly probably the tone this went, I want you to know. This is a very hostile moment between the Jews and Pilate. The Jews, Pilate said to them, "Take him yourselves and judge him by your own law." The Jews said to him, "It is not lawful for us to put anyone to death." This was to fulfill the word that Jesus had spoken to show by what kind of death he was to die. So Pilate entered his headquarters again and called Jesus and said to him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus answered, "Do you say this of your own accord, or did others say it to you about me?" Pilate answered, "Am I a Jew? Your own nation and the chief priests have delivered you over to me. What have you done?" Jesus answered, "My kingdom's not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would have been fighting, that I might not be delivered over to the Jews. But my kingdom is not from the world." Then Pilate said to him, "So you are a king?" Jesus answered, "You say that I am a king. For this purpose I was born, and for this purpose I have come into the world, to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice." Pilate said to him, "What is truth?" After he had said this, he went back outside to the Jews and told them, "I find no guilt in him. But you have a custom that I should release one man for you at the Passover. So do you want me to release to you the king of the Jews?" They cried out again, "Not this man, but Barabbas." Now Barabbas was a robber. And there we'll end tonight the reading of God's word. I'd like you to remember in this particular passage where we are at this point. If you weren't here this morning, there have been two trials that we are looking at here. They come in sets of three. Jesus has been arrested. He is now facing trial. The trials he has to undergo are difficult trials. They are full of falsehood. They are vicious trials. They are unjust trials. And this morning we studied that each trial we looked at comes in three parts. John doesn't capture all of that for us. John has specific purposes in capturing aspects of the trial. But he had first went to Annas, a high priest who had been removed by Rome, and his son-in-law was put into place, but Annas still held the cords of power. That is clear here as a high priest. The whole thing, of course, in the first trial was a big scam. How would you like to be put on trial between 1 and 3 a.m. in the morning so that no one can get you and see this? I mean, even in our day, we would just decry injustice everywhere. Jesus was asked to incriminate himself, which also broke the law. Everything about it was wrong. Everything about it was unjust. And what John is doing here is just that. He's really showing us that, if you're asking me for a basic point, that he's showing us they had no just cause to do this to Jesus. And it's unveiling for us the unjust reason that Jesus was put on the cross. Now we're going to look at this and understand as we go, especially next week. You're going to see, it's the psalm A greater judge has taken his seat. That's what we know has happened here. There's a greater judgment that's being rendered. There's a greater thing that we understand about all of this, that this helps us to see the outward beatings and the things that happened to him. We say in our own Heidelberg that he suffered a punishment, not just in body, but in soul. And we'll be looking at that. We'll be talking about that as we go in the next Sunday, and then as we approach Good Friday. But remember that God was doing this, that a greater purpose was unfolding that would be made known to the ends of the earth. Remember when the gospel would go out, the very first sermon, I'm going to close on this note in a little bit, the very first sermon when they were preaching and Peter said, the serious crime of humanity against the Lord of glory was that you have taken him and by lawless hands have crucified him and put him to death. Lawless hands. There's nothing just about this. And that's what I think you should leave with tonight. If I've done anything, hopefully you'll see that. There's nothing just about this. They took the just one and did something terrible to him. Well, here we are. After hours of this, no real charge has even been made, has it? What charge have you found? The council decides that he should be put to death. That is evident here. So what we have is now Jesus being moved and shifted to and handed over to the civil authorities, and a great transfer now takes place. The first point I want you to consider here is the accusation that comes out. So we're going to look at that. We're going to look at the accusation that is made, the interrogation, and then this great release that happens, which really leaves us on a shocking note. That's the effect of this text when we're done. Look at verse 28, that Jesus is led from Caiaphas to the Praetorium is what it is. It's early morning. Early morning. The Praetorium was the governor's house. This was Pilate's palace. You'll notice it says it was early. We've already known that the first trial had just taken place between 1 and 3 a.m., and these guys are up early doing the Lord's business, aren't they? They bring him to Pilate's house as early as they possibly can. As soon as light is up, they bind the Lord, and they lead him off to the governor's headquarters. Jesus has been in prison and is now moving to the ultimate destination of the cross, of what he's been talking about the entire time. Now, at this point, John highlights something that should be sadly ironic and infuriating to us. You'll notice in verse 28, but they themselves did not go into the Praetorium. They themselves did not enter the governor's headquarters so that they would not be defiled, but could eat the Passover. You say, what? They were worried about being ceremonially clean to go eat the Passover, the very thing that would celebrate a Passover lamb who would shed his blood so that they would be passed over and not face the judgment. But they got to be clean doing it. I think John is really capturing for us the utter hypocrisy here of the Jews at this point. The hypocrisy of the whole thing. They lead Jesus right up to the palace, but they won't step into this filthy Gentile Pilate's palace, the house of Praetorium of a Gentile, especially this unclean hall where criminals go. There's a line and we're not crossing it. And it's just a shocking moment. I mean, I really don't even know what to say about it. Think of the irony here of what they're going to go celebrate with clean hands. And look who they've just delivered over. Now, Pilate comes out the door. It's probably 5 or 6 a.m. You think he likes this? Pilate's really unhappy. You can hear it in the dialogue. He's ticked off. Here these Jews go again with their squabbles, and I got to deal with it. Here they go again with all their religious fights, and I'm tired of it. What accusation do you bring against this guy? I want to know. Why are you calling me out of bed? Pilate hated the Jews. He absolutely hated the Jews. We know this from history. He was the governor of the southern half of Palestine, and he ruled over the province and was directly accountable to the emperor of Rome. So this is a big moment for Pilate. He's got to handle it well. He would actually be removed from this position if the emperor felt that he failed to keep the peace. So Pilate's under immediate pressure. Pilate understands what he has to do. He hated the Jews, who were notorious for upheaval. He knew what they believed. Pilate was proud. You'll remember in Luke's gospel, he had mingled the blood of worshipers in Israel. That's how vicious of a man this was. You didn't mess with Pilate. So he was the kind of leader that took insurrection very seriously. Pilate would take the sword against his own people, but this threat of insurrection was a real one. All Pilate really cared about at this point was keeping his power, which meant he has to keep the emperor of Rome happy. So here come the Jews. Notorious for revolts, notorious for fights. Remember that they believed, Pilate knew this, remember they believed that God was going to come and crush the Romans when the Messiah came. That their king was going to come and sit on the throne and take out the emperor. That's what they were waiting for. That's what they believed about the kingdom. They expect a king to come and take care of people like Pilate. So you can see the tension that's here right now. So here we are. We're right in front of the Praetorium, 5 or 6 a.m., By the time we get to Pilate's trial next time, he's going to take this thing out on the judgment seat of the terrace. There's an over terrace that overlooks the road. The masses would be able to come up, and they're going to bring Jesus out. You're going to see all of that. But this interrogation goes a while, and you'll notice here that they have stood there with Jesus. And what the question that Pilate now asks is, what accusation do you have against him? I want to know. What is your charge? What has this man done? He knows, obviously, that they have brought Jesus to be condemned as a threat. But we've got to find out what specifically the accusation is. And there's an interesting little dialogue that goes on here. I think that John is showing they weren't even really clear on the matter. Notice what they said. They answered him, "If this man were not doing evil, we would not have delivered him over to you." What do you hear now? Are you questioning our judgment? We're the highest court in Israel. We're the highest court. You just need to confirm our decision about what needs to happen to this man. This is the attitude that's coming out here about Jesus. So what a total disregard of justice. Don't you worry about it. We've told you he's evil. We've told you enough. Pilate knew how scrupulous the Jews were about their law. Pilate understood this, and he sort of mocks their authority now in verse 31. And he says, "Well, take him yourselves then, and you guys judge him in accordance with your own law. If you're judges, then you be executioners." And they shoot back, "Oh, but we're not permitted to do that. Rome took that from us." That's why Jews weren't stoning anymore. They would have stoned. If we could, Pilate, we'd be done with him. The Romans possessed all jurisdiction for capital punishment. They took it. It was theirs. They owned it. They claimed it. And all of a sudden, John stops the narrative here. It's just a really interesting moment that John stops the narrative in this first part to give us an insight as to why the Romans had been given this authority and that it had been taken from the Jews. When the Jews said, "It's not lawful for us to put anyone to death," we read, "so that," here's the purpose of that, "the saying of Jesus might be fulfilled, which he spoke, signifying by what death he would die." Now, I don't know if that means a lot to you, but it really does, again, communicate what John keeps telling us. This whole thing is in Jesus' hands. This whole thing's in Jesus' hands. He hasn't said a word here yet. And they're not in control of a thing. John doesn't want us. John is so intent to make sure we don't lose that thought. He stepped into this. He chose this. This was the Father's will for him to do, to save every single one of those whom the Father had given him to save. And Jesus had been saying this the whole time. Remember what he said? "Behold, we are going up to Jerusalem. The Son of Man will be betrayed to the chief priests and to the scribes, and they will condemn him to death and deliver him to the Gentiles to mock and to scourge and to crucify, and the third day he will rise again." Well, lo and behold, this is going just as planned. There's nothing out of ordinary here of what Jesus said. "I'm going to be put to death by the Gentiles." The Lord never wanted us to miss this. I think this is an important point heading into here shortly Good Friday and the celebration of Easter. I think as I look around the world and I see celebrations with this, I think how often the real purpose of this and an understanding of this is missed, as the whole thing becomes a sentimental mess. As if Jesus, this whole thing got away from him, and we feel sorry for him and we try to reenact the cross. I mean, this happens in certain cultures. Jesus is carrying his cross. He will carry it. He is bloody. He is beaten. A crown of thorns will be on his head. And all of it was purposely planned for you. We got to keep that in front of us. Now, we have this charge that is made. If you were to go through the Gospels and say, what accusation did the Jews have against Jesus? It's three things. This is a really important moment to think about. What was their charge against him? And there's really three things that throughout the Gospels you would find. Number one, we found, Luke 23, this fellow perverting the nation. Number two, this fellow was forbidding to pay taxes to Caesar. And number three, saying that he himself is Christ, a king. That's the accusation. That's the one concern here that permeates this section and what John wants us to understand. The accusation singularly comes down to this: Jesus is a seditious rebel trying to overturn Caesar's throne. That's the accusation. That's what the Jews will use in the next chapter. When they say, "He says he's a king, you have to deal with this, Pilate." Even when Pilate says, "There's nothing wrong with this man," you have to. He said he's a king. Now, it's interesting because back in chapter 6, the ironies are thick here. Back in chapter 6, they had tried to make him king. They had tried to take him by force and make him king, and Jesus wanted nothing to do with it. So here they are using this against him. This is the charge. This is the accusation. Now comes the great interrogation. So Pilate takes Jesus into the headquarters of the Praetorium. In verse 33, he enters the Praetorium. He takes Jesus, calls Jesus, and says to him this great question. Asks him this great question: "Are you the King of the Jews?" Now, I don't think this was a nice moment either. I think Pilate sized him up. I think Pilate looked at him and said, "Are you the King of the Jews? Is this what they've delivered up to me as their king? Is this the one? This is pathetic. Are you their king?" That's how you should take it. I believe he is so angry at 6 a.m. I mean, you know, this is coffee time. 6 a.m. that the Jews have brought this lowly beggar in their eyes, this no outward glory king. Look at him. He's not even wearing the hat. He's not beautiful. Isaiah 53 told us there's no comeliness to him. He doesn't look powerful. He looks rather pathetic to Pilate. He's not dressed like a king. He doesn't look like a king. He doesn't look anything like anything that's a threat to Rome. This is your threat? Are you kidding me? Now, Pilate's interested in one thing. Pilate was concerned with this charge, seriously so. He was forced to deal with it, that Jesus was a rebel against Caesar. Clearly, Jesus had a mighty following. That's the one thing he cares about. He doesn't care about anything else. All he cares about is making sure how he can put this out. Roman emperors were constantly being assassinated. You study these histories and you study what they did to each other and how crazy some of them were. I mean, we really don't have too much to complain about. Did you know that? These guys were really bad. Ask Dr. Godfrey. He knows. He taught me that. Jesus, have you come to take down the president? This is what it sounds like. Is that what you're doing? You claiming to be king over our president? That's a question I want to know. That's what I'm interested in. You need to tell me. Jesus responds brilliantly. Did you say this? Or did they? Do you say that yourself? Do you want to know yourself? Or are you asking on behalf of them who are saying that? Did others say that to you? Who wants to know? See, Jesus was asking. If Pilate was asking based on what the Jews said about Jesus, about their idea of a kingship, no. But if you want to know, Pilate, about what I am as a king, I'll tell you, because he does. Jesus would not be boxed in to the kind of kingship the Jews were forcing. So Jesus is standing there bound up. He has no one to defend him, no weapons, no help. And this is the most pathetic king that Pilate, in his view, has ever seen. And Pilate responds, am I a Jew? Am I a Jew? Your nation of chief priests have delivered him over to me. What have you done? And that, beloved, is the question of the text. That is the question of the text. What have you done? I think John wants us to think about that. What a question, Jesus. What have you done? I want to know if you are claiming to be king in opposition to Caesar. You know, this is the kind of moment where you feel like you have to justify yourself, don't you? This is really that moment. You know, when bad things are said about me, I do everything I can to make myself look as good as possible. That's what you do too. Here comes one of the most important replies in all Scripture. Jesus looks at him and says, my kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would be fighting that I might not be delivered over to the Jews. But now my kingdom is not from here. It's really a chilling statement. You can almost hear Pilate thinking, what in the world are you talking about? It's as if Christ said, my kingdom doesn't attack the emperor. Doesn't attack the position of the emperor. I'm not a rebel against civil authorities. It's really good for Christians to hear this today, by the way. God has put things in place. We can learn a lot from this. I have a whole different kingship that is not of this world.
You're listening to Abounding Grace with Pastor Chris Gordon. Questions, comments about the program, as always, are more than welcome. We'd love to hear from you. How's the program encouraging you in your walk and relationship with Christ? Reach out to us. Let us know, won't you? Our number is 888-504-8805. Or you can visit us online, agradio.org. Now, that is a great resource to have handy. Not only do we have past programs available online at our website, we also have jumping off points to Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, as well as recent articles written by Pastor Chris and other friends of the ministry. Again, agradio.org. We also would like to remind you that you're a very key part of this ministry, Abounding Grace Radio. Through your financial partnership with us and prayerful support, we are able to continue this ministry, not only on this station, but others as well. So would you please consider partnering with us financially, whether it's a one-time gift, a monthly gift, no gift is too small or too large. Reach out to us again at agradio.org or call us at 888-504-8805. Hey, thanks for joining us today. Until next time, God bless. Abounding Grace is brought to you on this radio station by Abounding Grace Radio Ministries.
Hi, this is Chris Gordon, pastor of the Escondido United Reformed Church. I'd like to invite you to our Sunday worship services at 9:30 a.m. and 5 o'clock p.m. on Sunday. We have two worship services, 9:30 a.m. and 5 o'clock p.m. We preach Christ and Him crucified with the goal that you would live in the joy of this comfort in the knowledge of the forgiveness of all of your sins. 1864 North Broadway is the address here in Escondido. We'd love to see you this Sunday.